Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu class, Eastern Section, First Division, Chapter 2, Second Wave, Sadhana Bhakti. We're about finishing the discussion from verse 23 through 53, 30 verses, where Rupa Goswami is proving that the devotees of the Lord, especially the worshippers of Radha and Krishna, they're not interested in any form of liberation, even if liberation is offered to them. They're happy just to serve the lotus feet of the Lord, or to hear about the pastimes of the Lord, or to remember the Lord, or to speak about the qualities of the Lord. That's all they want, nothing more. So there's one verse here from first canto of Queen Kunti's prayers. Tata paramahamsanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vidar vida artam katam pashimahi striyaha. Mother Kunti is praying to Krishna. You yourself descend to this world to propagate the transcendental science of bhakti yoga, devotional service, into the hearts of advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators, who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Jiva Goswami's commentary. All the verses from 23 to 53, Rupa Goswami has been giving proofs that those who desire the happiness of serving the Lord do not desire liberation. Now, starting with the present verse, Rupa Goswami intends to describe the efforts of such devotees to offer service to the Lord. And Kunti is saying, Mother Kunti, Queen Kunti, how can we women understand you whose purpose is to teach bhakti yoga to the paramahamsas? So there's a transition now. Now it's going to speak about devotion and how one can practice devotion and who's qualified to practice devotion. Mother Kunti, she's feeling that I'm a very simple person. I'm a mother, I'm a woman. At least this is what she's saying here. That these advanced yogis and transcendentalists, you try to teach them yoga, but how can I understand? And of course, it's explained in that chapter, first canto of Bhagavatam, that bhakti doesn't depend on any qualification, but the heart. If one has a heart to serve, whether one's woman or sudra or businessman or American or Russian or whatever, we're not even, most of us sitting here have nothing to do with Vedic Dharma. We have no varna, no ashram. We're Anaryans, Mlech, Yavana, etc. But we're all performing bhakti of some sort. Because bhakti is called the Jiva Dharma. It's a religion of the Atma. It's called Atma Dharma. So the Atma is not designated. It's called Nirupadi. It's called Nirupadi Dharma. Nirupadi. Nirupadi Dharma means the religion or the duty or the practice or the activities which are free from all designation. Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam, Tatpara Tvena Nirmala, Rishikesha Rishikenam, Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. This Bhakti Seva, or the service of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, doesn't depend on any designation. How big you are, how tall, how short, how rich, how poor, what gender, it doesn't depend on anything. Rather, it depends on giving up all those identities. Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam means to give up all these falsities, all these extraneous positions and designations, and simply identify with the core of your being, the essential nature of the self. I am. What am I? What actually am I? Underneath it all, underneath all the coverings, what am I? I'm a particle of bliss. I'm a particle of desire. I'm a particle of service. If you analyze the Atma, and you'll see that these are the primordial urges, or the primordial tendencies of the Atma. Joy, happiness, action, activity, motion, and generally activity or motion in relation to others, and generally in a mood of service or a mode of doing something for someone, if not ourselves, someone else, but some type of service. So this is the nature of the Atma. So Atma Dharma is the actual religion of the soul. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote an entire book called Jiva Dharma. It's not Hindu Dharma. It's not Christian Dharma. It's not Muslim, Buddhist, etc. Because ultimately, Dharma, the purest form of Dharma is the Dharma of the Atma. All these other Dharmas are Dharmas of the body. Varnashram Dharma. Varnashram Dharma is Dharma related to the body and what position the body's in what Varna and what Ashram. But Lord Chaitanya, he was preaching this Panchama Purusharta. He was preaching that the highest Dharma is love, prema, love for Radha and Krishna. And he was saying, Naham vipro nacha narapatir napi vaishud and shudro, Naham varni nacha griha pitir navanashto yitirava, Kintu pradyanikala paramananda purnabhidav der, gopi bartu padakamalayor, das, das, anodas. So he, and this is a prayer, of course, he would utter. Gauranga Mahaprabhu in his ecstasy of Radhabhav, before he would try to bring Vrijendra Nanda and Krishna from the temple of Puri, Jagannath Puri, Jagannath would mount his Rath cart. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radhabhav would dance before Jagannath and try to bring Jagannath from the temple, which represents Kurukshetra, or Dwarka, which is basically the same. Krishna, in other words, Krishna and Dwarka Krishna in Kurukshetra, meeting the gopis like Radharani. Then Radharani and the other gopis imploring him and begging him, please come from Kurukshetra and come with us back to Vrindavan. Come in the chariot, sit in the chariot of our hearts, sit in the chariot of our minds, sit in the chariot, because this chariot, as we mentioned before, Jagannath's chariot runs on 16 wheels. And these 16 wheels represent these 16 kala, 16 shaktis. And the shaktis are all represented by the gopis. They're expert in all the 64 shaktis, or 64 Rs. So the gopis are the wheels of Krishna's chariot, and the chariot is his mind and heart. And Krishna's heart and mind moves however the gopis move, he moves. If Radharani turns to the right, Krishna turns to the right. If Radharani turns to the left, Krishna turns to the left. So this love moves Krishna. Krishna is moved by love and he's controlled by love. He follows the flow of love. Wherever pure love is being expressed, Krishna moves there. The Jagannath cart is running on 16 wheels, and these 16 wheels are the 16 kala, 16 shaktis, and they're all the different manjaris and gopis, sakis and gopis. So Mahaprabhu is coming before Jagannath, inviting and begging him, please come with me. I will dance before you and be attracted by my love. And follow me to Gundicha. And Gundicha is Brajadam. Gundicha is the gardens and groves of Vrindavan. But before that, he enacted that dance of love, Gaur Nataraj, before Jagannath, then he offered four prayers. And one of the prayers was, Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Govarmanya Hitayaja, Jagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. And the second prayer that Gauranga uttered to Jagannath Shamsundar Vrijendra Nandan on the chart is Naham Vipro Nacha, this verse. Gopi Bhartu Parakamalir Das Das and Das. In this verse, besides the rasic significance of uttering this prayer at the time of Rath Yatra, but apropos to the discussion, in this verse Lord Chaitanya is decrying this Varnan Ashram. He says, Naham Vipro Nacha Narapatir Nabi Vaishan Shudra. He says, I'm Sarva Padi Vinirmuktam. None of these upadis, none of these designations apply to the Atma Dharma, the Jiva. He said, I'm not a Brahman, a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. I'm not a Brahmachari, Grihastha, or Vanaprastha, Sannyasi. I'm not man, woman. What am I? Das, das, anodas. This is Jivarasu, Parya, Krishna, or Nityadas. I am a servant. If I'm in a loving mood of Krishna's friend, then I'm a das. If I'm in a loving mood of Krishna's father, I'm a das. If I'm in a loving mood of Krishna's gopi, or his mother, or his nurse, then I'm a dasi, dasi bhav. It's either dasabhav or dasibhav. So this is the actual teaching of Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is teaching Jiva Dharma. So this is the highest form of Dharma, which is open to anyone. So Kunti is, in her own humility, she's saying, oh, how can we women understand these, the science of bhakti? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying that this is for everyone. And then this whole discussion in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami will now explain by studying different verses how devotees, it's kind of general analysis of what the devotees, first we discussed for 30 verses, how devotees, someone who's worshipping Radha and Krishna, even if liberation is offered to them, they refuse to accept it. And now there's still some more verses about this subject. So we'll read this verse. This is from 1st Canto, 7th chapter, verse 10. Atmaramas chamunayo nigranta apyurukrame kurvant yaikoitim bhaktim itam bhutaganohari. All different varieties of atmaramas, which means those who take pleasure in the self, especially those established on the path of self-realization, and those freed from all the rules and prohibitions of the scriptures, desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. So now that there's a transition. First he's saying that devotees of the Lord aren't interested in liberation because they're experiencing so much happiness by serving the Lord. That was 30 verses. Now he's saying, and even now he's going the other way. Devotees are experiencing so much happiness, they're not interested in liberation. Now let's take it from the other way. Well, what about those people who are liberated? So, well, those people who are liberated, when they see the happiness of devotion or devotees, then they say, oh, well, let us go that side. This looks, the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. So the liberated souls, they say, oh, you bhaktas, you seem to be so happy. Well, maybe I should try your path. So this, what you'll find in this development here is that, saying the Atmaramas, the munis that are relishing the bliss of the self, soham, aham brahmasmi, sarvakalvidam brahma, tatvamasi, and they're meditating on these various sutras or aphorisms, and they're absorbed in the bliss of Brahman in their own being, and somehow they meet a devotee or they see a devotee or experience a devotee engaged in the limbs of bhakti, and they become attracted. Somehow it touches their consciousness. And it's something, it registers in their consciousness. Oh, I think there's more bliss there. I'm Atmaram. I'm swimming in an ocean of bliss, the Atmaram Muni's field. But they see a devotee and they think, how it happens, I can't say, but it happens. There's so many examples in history. They think, it appears the ocean that he's swimming in is deeper than mine. I'm in an ocean of happiness. But his ocean seems deeper. And then they pursue. Because we don't find, at least in the histories that are presented to us, of course that's also can be debated, but we don't find any examples of devotees or bhaktas that give up the path of devotion and take up the path of Brahma Sayuja Gyan Yoga. They give up Bhakti Yoga for Gyan Yoga. Or they give up bhakti yoga for ashtanga yoga. Someone is actually fixed in the bliss of devotion. It's called premananda. Brahmananda and premananda. One who's fixed in premananda, he won't give that up for brahmananda. It's like someone is eating chapan bhog. Every day they're eating 56 varieties of foods and prepared in newer and newer ways. They won't give that up to eat something out of the garbage can on the street, some leftover piece of bread or broken cracker. It's quite obvious thing. So the next verse is from, doesn't say, I guess it's Rupa Goswami speaking. He's saying, though the five types of mukti have been described as worthy of rejection by a pure devotee. There are four of these five, namely Salokya, Sharshti, Sarshti, Samipya, and Sarupya, are not contradictory to bhakti. In other words, there's five types of liberation, spiritual liberation, and one is merging, Brahma-Sayujya, to merge with the jyoti of the Lord and give up one's individuality. So that one is not compatible with devotion, because devotion implies the ashraya and the vishaya, the prema-ashraya and the prema-vishaya, the reservoir of love and the object of love. So the subject of love is Krishna and the object of love is the devotee. The shelter of love, the ashraya, the shelter of love is the devotee. And the devotee is offering his love to the subject, and that's Krishna. So when you lose your identity or lose your individuality, then the two become one. And there's no exchange of love, and there's no exchange of service. So it's incompatible to bhakti, to merge with the Lord. But to live on the same planet with the Lord, or to share in the same type of opulence as the Lord in Vaikuntha, or to live in close proximity to the Lord, or have the same form as the Lord, these can be compatible and useful for the service of the Lord. So in the previous verse it says that in the previous shlokas, Rupa Goswami is establishing that pure devotees are not desiring the five forms of mukti, but they will accept four of them if Krishna wants that. If Krishna wants them, it's like this. Like you might be a servant of a master, and you're living with him in the same house. And you're just living there for the service of the master. You don't have any ambition to go any other place. You're satisfied to be engaged in your particular service in the master's house. Then the master says, listen, I want to move to Europe. And I want to go there. Would you like to go there and live with me in Europe? And the servant will say, I don't care, wherever you go. I'll serve. If you want me, if you're moving to Europe, I'm not attached to staying here. I'm attached to your service. My position is to serve you wherever you go. So this is Salokya. Salokya means to live on the same planet with the Lord, to live in Vaikuntha. So, but we're here, and we're here on this planet, or anywhere in this planet, or anywhere in this universe, rendering devotional service to the Lord and pure devotion, Shuddha Bhakti. And the Lord is accepting our service and reciprocating in kind with us, and we're serving Him. Everything is perfect. There's nothing more to be gained, nothing more to be desired, nothing more to be achieved. That is perfection in itself. But if the Lord, perchance, He says, well, listen, I'm very happy with your service, but I would like you to come to Vaikuntha. I would like you to live on the same planet. Would you like to go? And then what will the devotee say? Well, what will I do there? Will I have something to do? Will I have some engagement? And the Lord will say, yes, you'll continue the same. Whatever you're doing here, you'll do there. Except you won't go on the internet. There's no internet there. You know, surfing there. But you can cook and make garlands and sing and whatever. So many services you can do. Okay, fine. As long as I can serve you. So then the devotee will accept that type of liberation, or any type of liberation, if it's for the service, if it's compatible and harmonious and favorable for serving the Lord. So Jiva Goswami says here that though these four types of liberation are not extremely contradictory to bhakti, they are contradictory to a small degree, since they are accomplished with some unfavorable attitude. The favorable portion in these four is caused by the acceptance of some bhakti. There's a footnote here. If the devotee has a desire for these four, independent of the desire to please the Lord, then his bhakti is no longer anyabhilashita shunya. This term, anyabhilashita shunya, means anya means any other, abhilash, devoid of or shunya, free of or devoid of any other desire but to please the Lord. So I just mentioned that in my comment. that will accept the liberation. That the pure devotee thinks, yes, I'll accept liberation if that's what you want, as long as I can do service. But if the devotee is thinking, oh, I would like to get liberated and serve you. I would like to get free from this planet and go to your planet, go to the Vaikuntha, go back home, back to Godhead, and serve you there. Then there's some unfavorability there. It's not anukulyena. It's not fully 100% transparently for the pleasure of the Lord. It's not fully favorable to the Lord because there's some calculation from my side. There's something, there's a mixture of I want. I don't like it so much in this world. I like serving you, but if I can go there, I know it, everything I've heard about the spiritual world certainly sounds attractive. It sounds favorable to me. There's no harsh winters, no scorching summers. There's all these pigs and dogs and loudspeakers, and all these things are absent. And dirty streets and whatever. So if I'm thinking something for my own pleasure, then there's a little bit of mixture there. It's not the purest expression of bhakti. That's what he's saying. Now Rupa Goswami is speaking in his own words. Sakaishvaryotara seyam prema seva taretyapi salokyadir dvidat tatra nadya seva jushammata. There are two varieties of these four types of liberation. These four types of devotional Vaikuntha liberation. There are two varieties. One, predominated by the desire for happiness and power. And the other, predominated by the desire for prema. The first variety is not accepted by those who are inclined to serve the Lord. Jiva Goswami explains. One variety of liberation has the predominant desire for the happiness and powers which are natural to the spiritual world. In other words, here, if we cook an offering, then we have to carry it to the Lord and walk. But there, if you're in Vaikuntha, there's so much power there, as soon as you cook an offering, you can just tell the offering to go deliver itself. You can cook the offering, put it on a plate, and tell the plate, plate, fly. Fly over, fly into Vishnu's room and land on his dining table. And the plate will, because everything is conscious. And there's no limitations there. So you can say, plate, you go. I don't want to walk all the way from the kitchen over to Vishnu's dining room. So these type of powers are there. There's a story once of Rasikananda. Rasikananda was a great devotee who lived about 400 years ago. And he was a devotee of Shamananda Prabhu, was a great Siddha saint of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And he had all powers, devotional and mystic powers also. And Rasikananda did a lot of what we call miracles. So one time, 500 years ago, or 400 years ago, there was one Shaivite. And Shaivites and Vaishnavas, they always seem to be at logger ends. They're always fighting, not all, but many. They're fighting about who's supreme. Is Vishnu supreme or Shiva supreme? So that sometimes the Shaivites get a little excited to the point that they want to kill the Vaishnavas. And they even have wars sometimes. We've heard of the Crusades and quote-unquote religious wars. So there is a history of that, of Vaishnav-Shaivite wars in South India. It's a little embarrassing to say. And nevertheless, facts are the facts. So this particular Shaivite, he had one pet tiger. Interesting pet. He tamed this tiger, a lion. But he didn't want to spend any money feeding this tiger, so he used to feed Vaishnavas to the tiger. It sounds a little bit like the Roman days. In Rome, we heard like that, I don't know, but we saw some movies when we were children. That feeding the Christians to the lions, wasn't it something like that? And the Romans would collect a bunch of Christians and put them in a ring and the lions would run after them and eat them. So he had this, there was a similar thing going on with this Shaivite. He had this tiger and he would go around and whenever he found a Vaishnava, he would, like people do sometimes, we've had the experience on Harinam. We're going on Harinam somewhere and some man has a dog in the park on a leash. leash is like a rope. And then he ends up very ferocious type dog, big dog. And he lets the dog loose and he hits him. He says, get them, you know, sick them, sick them. And the dog comes running to the kirtan party, wanting to bite them. Of course, there's even a pastime where someone did this to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. The devotees are just walking in the morning walk in the park, and the man let his dog loose, some, I don't know, some wild dog, whatever they are, those wild dogs, German Shepherd or something. And the dog leaping and bounding towards Prabhupada's small entourage. Row, row, row. Then Prabhupada picked up his walking stick. Hut! 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 And the dog went, ooh! And the tail came down between its legs and turned around, ooh! Ran back and retreated to its master. So it wasn't much success. So we never faced any Vaishnav eating tigers on Sankirtan, but we did meet a few Vaishnav eating dogs. So this Rasikananda, this gentleman, this Shaivite, was coming to the villages around Bengal and feeding these Vaishnavas to his tiger. So someone told him that there's a very tasty Vaishnava living outside of town, and his name is Rasikananda. Because rasa means taste. The word rasa means flavor, mellow, mellow. Sometimes it's translated, rasa is translated as divine rapture or sacred rapture. Sacred rapture is a translation of rasa. Mellow taste, whatever. So they said there's a very tasty Vaishnava outside of town, and you're a Shaivite and you hate the Vaishnavas and you want to kill them all, so you should eat them, send your tiger out there. It was early in the morning, Pratakal, about 6 o'clock, and Rasikananda was sitting on one rock by the Ganga, and he had one neem dant, one neem twig, and he was brushing his teeth with a neem stick, neem twig. And then this Shaivite came with his tiger. And he saw this Vaishnav Tilak, Shamananda, Nupura Tilak, Rasikananda's forehead. And he was... He said, oh, very good, very, very good. Then he took hit his tiger, tom, he says, eat him up, eat him up. So the tiger is running to eat Rasikananda. And Rasikananda looked, he saw this tiger bounding toward him. And then he was sitting on one rock, so then he hit the rock and he said, rock, fly. And he's just sitting on, so then the rock started flying in the sky like a helicopter. And he's brushing his teeth and looking at, and just going, and way beyond the lion's reach. And he was just flying around on his rock. And this tantric yogi, this tantric Shaivite yogi, he was watching. He said, man, this is amazing. This Vaishnava is flying in the sky, sitting on a rock, brushing his teeth with a neem dant, with a neem twig. So then he called back his tiger and said, relax. Don't just fast for today. Do upavas. No breakfast today. He said, just relax. And then he went over with folded hands. He said, oh, Vaishnav Thakura, I'm very sorry. Please forgive me. But, you know, I'm a tantric and we have so many powers, but you seem to have an amazing power that you can sit, you can make a rock fly in the sky while you're sitting on it, brushing your teeth. How did you get this power? And Rasikananda said, I got this power by mantra. The mantra has so much power. And then he said, well, what is that mantra? I want that power. I want to have that extraordinary power. And he said, well, you have to take initiation first. And then he said, well, what are the niyamas or requirements? He said, first of all, you have to stop eating Vaishnavas. There's four regular principles. And first is, you have to follow the four regular principles. And the first is no eating Vaishnavas. And no keeping pet tigers. So then he abided by the rules. He let his tiger go in the jungle and be happy. And then he got initiation into the Krishna mantra from Rasikananda. So this is an example of the extraordinary powers that are within the within the reach of the Vaishnavas, even on this planet. And this verse is talking about the extraordinary powers that are available on Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. And when sometimes devotees are interested in liberation because they hear about these amazing powers, so there's one variety of liberation has the predominant desire for the happiness and powers which are natural to the spiritual world. In other words, some devotees say, I just want to serve the Lord. Okay, I go to the spiritual world, I serve the Lord. And if some powers are given to me or some, I get so much happiness by being here in this Anandam, Vaikuntha, so much thrill and pleasure comes to me. Okay, let it come, whatever. I'm not after that. If that comes, okay, I accept it. It's the mercy of the Lord. And then so much powers, so much mystic powers in Anima City, Lagami City, all these cities come to me. Okay, I'll use them all for Krishna's service. I'm not enamored by them. I'm not attracted or attached to them. I'm not living here because of that. I'm living here because of my Lord, because my beloved is here and I'm serving him. So this is, but some devotees, I think, well, this is very attractive. The other variety of devotee, or the other variety, they have the predominant desire for service of the Lord executed by one's natural love. Devotees do not accept the first variety. If the four types of liberation are not accompanied by service, they are rejected. Because oneness with the Lord is always without service, the devotees always reject sayujya. So that merging with the Lord, they always reject that. Although sometimes they can accept the other four types of mukti. It's interesting, this whole second wave, because we're going very methodically and rather slowly through the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we're covering every single verse of the book. So it may take about 8 years, maybe 10, 15, I don't know, in terms of Kartik, because we're only giving 30 classes, 34 classes during Kartik. There's no hurry. But this chapter, Sadhana Bhakti, this first wave, second wave, Sadhana Bhakti, it's almost like when they launch a spacecraft, they don't just stick something up and jump in it and light a match and fly off. There's so much preparation, years of preparation and training before the actual fact of what they want to accomplish, which is to launch the spacecraft and do some exploration up there. So we're trying to launch our souls into the spiritual world, into the eternal Prem Seva of Radha and Krishna. So in this discussion of sadhana bhakti, even before he's gotten into the actual sadhana, how to practice the sadhana, there's so much preliminary discussions, philosophical points, because this is all part of Abhideya Tattva, the actual practice of devotion. Rupa Goswami was empowered by Lord Chaitanya to teach the science of devotion, to teach the science of bhakti yoga. What is bhakti yoga? What is the foundation, the basic premises, the foundation of philosophy, the ground? We have to establish the ground. Before we want to move or walk or build or play, we have to establish the kshetra, the field, the ground. Even if you want to play, for example, a few children want to play somewhere. Oh, let's play soccer. And there's so many rocks and broken trees. Well, you have to clear the field. You can't just run out somewhere, all dead trees lying around, and play soccer. Even just to play, even for the sheer fun of it, for the simple act of playing, expressing the urge to play or sport with a few friends, you have to prepare the field. You have to clear the field of debris, broken trees and rocks. You may trip over the rock when you're running after the football, or what we say, soccer. So what to speak of the field of devotion? We have to prepare the field, because what we're trying to do, we're already locked and enmeshed. We're totally enmeshed in the field of samsara chakra, in this forest of material enjoyment. We're totally riveted, or firmly riveted and grounded in this land of maya. And we know this terrain is very familiar to us. This is user-friendly. as they say. This material body, these senses, these objects, people, places, environment, animals, trees, we know it all. We know it very well. We've been moving in this field for thousands of lifetimes. But now we want to leave this field and enter into the antimatter. We want to enter into the field beyond the gravitational pull of Maya. In that field, there's no gravitational pull of Maya. There's no Karshan. It's a land of Sankarshan. It's a land of Balaram. The only attractive force there is love. So we have to learn about that field. And so these are all the preliminaries. When you're reading Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, everything goes very quickly because it's summarized in Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion. So you cross the field so quickly you don't even know what happened. But when you go through verse by verse, and which is actually the original intention of Srila Prabhupada, the founder, our Gurudev, and the founder of ISKCON, when he started his Back to Godhead magazine in 1944 in India, he started serializing different books that he thought these books are so important that they should be studied verse by verse. So he had what we call, nowadays we call it Back to Godhead magazine. And it was also called Bhagavad Darshan, Hindi edition Bhagavad Darshan and Back to Godhead. So in those issues, he starts off, you can see, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, verse 1. And he has the verse and word-for-word meaning, just like the Bhagavatam standard. Word-for-word meaning, and then translation, then explanation or purport. And he went through several issues. He has many of the verses of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, one by one by one. But then things changed, and he started to concentrate on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then even sometimes Back to Godhead wasn't published for different circumstantial reasons. So that work was suspended. But Prabhupada was in those early editions of Back to Godhead magazine. You see the verse by verse translation and purporting of Nectar of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Of course, later in 1975, like 30 years later, Prabhupada went on to finish the Chaitanya Charitamrita, verse by verse, word by word, and translation purport. In a very quick way, but the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu he didn't do. He suspended that work and instead favored the idea of making a summary translation. It's called the Nectar of Devotion, which is a summary. So now we're following Prabhupada's original intention. Our godbrother Bhana Maharaj has translated this book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, verse by verse. So we feel very much blessings of Srila Prabhupada that we're attempting to study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse by verse along the lines of his original intention. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam. One of the verses which glorifies Rupa Goswami, Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitamina Bhutale, that he understood the Manobhishtam, the actual heart's desire of Lord Chaitanya. So he expressed that in his books. So disciples try to understand what is the heart of their guru, what is their actual heart's desire of their guru, and they try to carry that out. So the heart is multifaceted. A guru's heart has many chambers, more than four. An ordinary person's heart has four chambers, right auricle, right ventricle, left ventricle. But a guru's heart has many chambers. There's many chambers in his heart. So disciples, they try to understand something of the nature of the heart of a guru and carry it out. So that our attempt to go verse by verse is our expression of our understanding that Prabhupada wanted this and our other godbrothers presented it, made it a little easier since we don't know Sanskrit. We can read it in English and try to understand. So admittedly, it seems to be slow going, but every verse and every word of the scriptures is actually full of nectar, full of deep meaning, and full of nectar also. Depending on our receptivity and our purity and our faith, that's how much we'll receive from such study. So, we finish this verse. I'll read one more verse. This is Rupa Goswami's own discussion on these matters. Kintu premaika madhurya jusha ekantino haro naivanki kurvate jatu muktim panchavidamapi. But devotees solely attached to the Lord, who relish the sweetness of prem, never accept the five types of liberation at all. Kintu premaika madhurya jusha. Prema madhurya jusha. Ekantino haro. Solely attached to the Lord. Jusha. It's interesting. We have a word in English called juice. And when you go to these, you go by these sugarcane wallahs, ganaras, it's called ganaras. They say juice. J-O-O-S-E. Juice. The way they say it is very special. When we were on Govardhan Prikma on Sunday, you saw some of these. Sugarcane wallahs, sugarcane juice wallahs. Juice. The way they say it sounds so tasty. juice. Especially when you're walking 22 kilometers and it's 90 degrees out or 40 degrees out. 90 degrees Fahrenheit. But the word in Sanskrit is also that. It's J-U-S-H, jush. Jush means the taste, relishing the sweetness. Kintu premaika madhurya jusha. Prema madhurya jusha. Devotees are drinking the juice. They're relishing the sweet juice of Krishna prema. And this juice is coming from one, ekantino haro. It's coming from one person, ek means one, ekantino haro. It's coming from Hari. Hari is stolen, Hari means thief, Hari means lion, Hari means powerful. So the Lord, he comes and he steals our hearts. And then he gives us a juice. Premaika madhurya jusha. So when one is relishing that sweetness of prema madhurya, and then someone offers any liberation, he says, no, you keep it. No thanks. Jiva Goswami's commentary says that devotees that are relishing their prema seva, they're not interested in any type of sukha or aishwarya, any type of happiness or power. The first stage of service takes the form of sadhana. That means hearing and chanting about Krishna. Then one attains the second stage of service. That is called siddharup, or the perfected stage of service. There's a verse also later in Nectar of Devotion, seva sadhaka rupena siddharupena chaturhi. For pure devotees, those four types of liberation are achieved as secondary items of service. Pratita matsevaya. As stated in verses such as the following. Devotees of the Lord, matsevya pratitam te selokyadi chatushtyam, dichanti sevya purna kutonyat kalaviplutam. Devotees do not desire the happiness and powers attained through these four liberations at all. They are satisfied completely, having attained the highest bliss of serving the Lord directly, purna sevya. It says, if devotees do not even desire these types of liberation, how much more they dislike the temporary rewards of the material world? How could they desire such things? The next verse. Among the devotees who are dedicated solely to serving the Lord in love, devotees whose hearts have been stolen by Govinda are the best. Even the kindness of Narayan or other forms of Krishna cannot steal their hearts. So there are different devotees of the Lord. There's Narayan Bhaktas, Vishnu Bhaktas, Ram Bhaktas, Krishna Bhaktas, Bhaktas of Krishna in Dwarka, Bhaktas of Krishna in Mathura, Bhaktas of Krishna in Vrindavan, Vrindavan Krishna. So Govinda is in Vrindavan. Govinda. Go means senses, the indriya, the eyes, the nose, the mouth. the indriya, the senses. Go means cows. Go means gopas. Go means gopis. And vindate means one who gives satisfaction, or one who gives happiness or satisfaction to the senses, to the cows, to the land, to the gopis. So this Govinda name applies to Krishna and Vrindavan. And he's telling here that devotees of Govinda, they're so fully absorbed in serving the Lord, and they're experiencing so much satisfaction in that service. And it says here, their hearts have been stolen. Govinda Rita Manasa. Govinda Rita Manasa. Their hearts have been stolen. Their minds have been stolen. Because Govinda is the Lord of Gokula. So even the kindness of Narayana or other forms cannot steal their hearts. So there's different pastimes where other forms of Lord appear before Krishna Bhaktas, but they have no interest or no attraction. Once during Rasa dance and Vasant Ras during the springtime, which is described in Gita Govinda, and Panchari Rasastali, all the gopis were dancing there and Krishna disappeared to test their love. And they were searching for him. And Krishna saw the gopis coming nearby where he was. He wanted to disguise himself so they wouldn't find him. So he disguised himself as Narayan, Chaturbhuj Narayan, with four arms. I was just standing there with a shank, Gada Padma Chakra. And then the gopis said, "Oh, Narayan." I mean, it's an amazing thing, because you have to remember that they're in Nara Leela. The gopis are only thinking we're human beings. They're not thinking that they're some celestial, divine, spiritual beings. They're only thinking they're coward girls of Vrindavan. They're just gopis. And they know that Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's God, the omnipotent, the creator, the cause of all causes. And it's pretty rare for a mortal being to have darshan, to see God. God doesn't just walk around the streets, stand at the tea stalls, reading the newspapers. It's very, very rare. So it's rare now. Do you walk down the street, you ever see Narayan standing there at the tea stall? You don't even see Pondraka, even imitation. You don't even see anybody imitating Narayan. So it's the same thing as 5,000 years ago. Same Vrindavan. And the gopis, when they were living here, they're also temples of Narayan. They were Vaishyas. They were taking care of cows, and there were temples in their villages. And even Nanda Baba, he was a Vaishya king. He was the lord and the king of the Vaishyas, or the coward people, the Abhiras, and Nandagaon. And in his palace in Nandagaon, he had one temple of Lord Narayan. He had a deity of Narayan. And they had some Brahmins there, Mata Mangal and others were doing puja there. So they know about murtis, they know about archamurtis in temples. So they go in the temple and you offer some incense and ghee and offer some prayers, and you go out and take some Narayan prasad. But they have to think how significant it is. The gopis are walking, all of a sudden they see in the middle of the forest, God is standing there. And it's not some statue that fell out of someone's temple, or the Muslims were attacking someone's temple and they left the statue in the middle of the forest. Sometimes they leave the idol or the statue in the middle of the forest to prevent the statue from being desecrated by the Mughals. But it's fully a living personality. God himself, Narayan, was there. And when the gopis saw, they weren't struck with awestruck or amazed, or they didn't fall on the ground. "Oh, Narayan, I just fell on their hands. Oh, Narayan, Haribol." Very casual. It's pranams, Narayan, namo Narayan. "And Narayan, by the way, did you see Krishna?" Imagine your boyfriend leaves you somewhere, and then you're looking in the forest for your boyfriend, and you bump into God. And you see God. "Oh, God, nice to see you. Hey, did you see my boyfriend?" "Which way did my boyfriend go?" I mean, you have to be really, really detached, really attached to your boyfriend. Because if you meet God, what do you need a boyfriend for? I mean, whatever you can get from your boyfriend, you can certainly get more from God. So, in terms of, in all terms, in every term. But the gopis didn't think that, "Okay, God, so what, big deal." So they just said, Namo Narayan. Did you see, by the way, since you're God, you're supposed to be all-pervading. We read somewhere that God is all-pervading and all-knowing. You're supposed to be, aren't you omnipotent and omniscient? Aren't you all-knowing? Since you're all-knowing, then where the hell is our boyfriend? Have you seen our boyfriend go by? So then Krishna went like this, and he pointed with his four arms. He went that way. Vishnu, Krishna disguised as Narayan, he pointed like this. So that was fine. So it shows that the Govinda Bhaktas, Govinda Rita Manasa, those devotees whose hearts and minds have been stolen by Govinda, even God himself doesn't attract them or doesn't entice them or cannot captivate them. They're so much overwhelmed by their loving feelings and reciprocation with the Lord. So we'll start, this is the next verse tomorrow. But in that same story, when that was one group of gopis came and Krishna disguised as Chaturbhuj Narayan was able to fake out the gopis. He was able to fool them. But when Radharani came with Lita and Vishakha and they saw Narayan standing there and Krishna was trying to fool them, then it backfired. Krishna was standing there with his forearms and then Radharani came and said, "Oh, Narayan." And then just hearing her voice, when Krishna heard Radharani's voice, "Oh, Narayan." "Oh, this is Radharani. I don't know if I can hold this disguise up too long. And then she started to say, "Narayan, have you seen Shyamasundar?" And before she could even finish the word Shyamasundar, the two arms disappeared, the flute came out, the pugri came on his head, and he embraced Radharani. He couldn't maintain his disguise in front of Radharani's love. Her love is so powerful that there's no room for Narayan or anybody to stand in the way.